Okay, so actually, let me start with side comments on modular stabilization. And so yesterday we discussed a little bit about how moduli can be stabilized in string perturbation theory. And typically, as Max was observing, it's very hard to stabilize the dilaton if not after turning on fluxes, which typically are hard to describe from a conformality theory point of view. However, there are two effects that can combine to stabilize moduli, and these are usually the combination of non-left-right symmetric, so if you want non-geometric twists and sheets. So there are many examples. Actually, this applies to, and I will discuss some specific example in a moment. So the first example that one can consider is a compactification on T6 cross the 2 cross the 2, where in addition to the standard twist, this Z2 include a shift. And so what happens, and similarly here, so what happens is that usually this gives rise to a model in which H11 is equal to 3 and H21 is equal to 51 or vice versa, which are actually related by discrete torsion or, if you want, mirror symmetry of one another. And what happens is that this 51 Kennedy deformation or the 51 complex structure deformation are really three coming from the twisted sector, and then there are 48, which is actually 3 times 16 coming from the twisted sector. Now, what happens is that if you combine the twist with a shift, the deformation which are associated to the twisted sector are lifted, and in particular, one can construct models with H11 equal to H21 equal to 3, which are, in a sense, self-mirror one another. In particular, if you could
shift, Massimo, it's not, you have to shift all three twisted sectors. So to get
So all the three twisted sectors become massive. Or twisted module.
You can actually so don't leave those.
Sure. I will come back. Okay, now in particular, now this can be done in type 2 A or B. But this can be also be done in heterotic cases, in heterotic string. And in fact, actually, a model of this kind was proposed originally by Bath and Witten to admit a type 1 dual. At a perturbative level. This model has been recently reconsidered by Camara, Dudas, Meillard, and Tradisi as a model in which the presence of the a breaking of SO 32 gauge group to SO, say, 32 minus B cross SOP by discrete Wilson line can lead to a gauge theory without matter. And so, in principle, you would expect the generation of a non-perturbative superpotential associated to gauge condensate, which is exactly of the race-like kind that was described yesterday, mentioned at least yesterday, so that there would be some with a coefficient, say. Where these coefficients are related to the, so that means that okay, clearly you don't stabilize all the moduli. You still have three moduli from the untwisted sector, both for the Keeler and complex structure deformation. But you can use this superpotential to stabilize the dilaton. And this group has analyzed the effect of fluxes and argue that some of the modules get stabilized, but not all of them. Okay.
This is a field theory argument.
I mean, this is a field theory argument, yeah.
Which model I do stabilize at the screen level, which one do you stabilize using the pizza?
Okay, now let me go to a model in which in type 2 you stabilize a lot of moduli and you end up with essentially H11 equal to 1 and H21 equal to 1. Clearly, it's not full moduli stabilization, but still it's an interesting model. And this can be constructed, done this with Anastasopoulos and Morales and Pradisi. You combine essentially two.
Sorry, one question about the right string one. So I guess whether the Dilatoon is stabilized depends on what the A's are, right?
But this, for this case, I mean, these are fixed by essentially these are related to.
No, I mean the capital A's, right? It should depend on.
Yeah, these are hard to compute, honestly. This is not being computed.
Well, I would, when I look at it, I would think it depends on the signs of those two things.
Yeah, sure.
So how does one know that the signs are different for the two gauge groups?
We don't know that. But I mean, a superpotential of this kind has a chance to stabilize the Dilatoon. That's the point.
It doesn't depend on the signs.
Yeah. It doesn't depend, okay.
Well, this is complex, so it can rotate.
Yeah. Oh. No, it's a fixed. Clearly, in principle, this can depend on the U moduli. And then, clearly, for different values of the U moduli, you can achieve moduli stabilization for other you don't. I mean, Dilatoon stabilization for other you don't. So,
S is a complex field with different coefficient spaces, so X can be an allocation of an overall. Sign, right? The phases of S, because...
Yeah, but I mean, clearly, it may happen that you stabilize, for instance, the real part, but you don't stabilize the imaginary part by this kind of argument.
The imaginary part doesn't really matter, because it's an axiom, so...
Still, it's a modulus. And if you don't... if you do modular stabilization in a supersymmetric way, then clearly you expect both of them to... Because otherwise, there will be... inconsistent with the preservation of any one supersymmetry. So let me go to this other model that has essentially two different left-right asymmetric twist and shift, but however it's made symmetric by the fact that you essentially perform a projection by two of them, and also another one which acts, once again, in a left-right symmetric way. The idea is that, for instance, for this one, you can perform a twist of four of the internal coordinates, let me say I, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and combine with a shift of one of the left coordinate and one of the right coordinate, which, however, is a different one, okay? And the other one, clearly, the right, this projection would be simply I bar. When I say I 1, 3, 4, 5, I mean I simply twist the left moving coordinates, not the right moving ones. And similarly here, I can twist by something like 1, 2, 5, and 6, and combine with shifts like sigma along the third direction and sigma bar along the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 direction. Clearly, this model has a very reduced number of moduli, and the nice feature is that this is non-geometric but still left-right symmetric. So as I try to stress, you perform the same kind of projection of the left hand move in the end. And so what happens is that some of the moduli can be removed by introducing generalized omega projections, which are allowed in this case because of the left-right symmetry of the model. And in particular, Okay, first of all, you have the number of hypermultiplet in the original type 2 theory is equal to 2, and the number of vector multiplet is equal to 1. Okay? Now, each hypermultiplet will give you, in the after omega projection, whatever you do, one chiral multiplet. So at least you have two chiral multiplets coming from this set. However, in the vector multiplet case, you can either keep the vector component of the vector multiplet or the scalar component of the vector multiplet. So in principle, if you perform an omega projection that keeps only the vector component and removes the scalar component, you have also stabilized, in a sense, by the effect of the omega projection, the vector multiplet. Now, the problem with this kind of models is that essentially once you try to introduce the brain, which are there, for instance, to cancel the tuple associated to these omega planes, the typical gauge group that you get are non-chiral. And so this is a manifestation of, if you want, the tension between chirality and modular stabilization in this kind of context. Just to finish and to connect to Alon observation, let me describe another model, which is a heterotic model.
Don't you introduce new moduli when you have deep brains?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, typically, these non-chiral deep brains can have additional moduli. In the sense that not only you have, if you want, bifundamentals, but you also have adjoint multiplets. Still, I mean, the presence of the omega projection breaks supersymmetry from n equal to 2 of the parent type 2 theory to n equal to 1. So in principle, you may have or try to embed models in which you have no extra moduli associated to these deep brains. So the model that we didn't achieve any chiral construction, to be honest.
Ramon tadpoles.
Sorry?
You violate tadpole cancellation if you try to make it chiral.
Yeah, sure. No, what I'm saying is if I respect the rules of model building in this context, you don't find any chiral model. Then clearly, you may think of introducing additional fluxes to modify the tadpole conditions and try to get chiral model. But
it's usually worse. Because
not this.
If you add fluxes, that is just more charge that you overshot typically anyway, like brains.
Yeah. Okay. So we didn't achieve any chiral model in this context. So this is now let me describe a very simple model. I would call it Alanahe, where this is Antoniadis, Ellis, Hagelin and Anopoulos, which starts with a toroidal compactification on a six torus of O12 for the left movers, cross O28, cross E8 for the right movers, and performs a Z2 cross Z2 projection that breaks the O12 to O4. Cube. This is not really a gauge symmetry, only the right moving object are associated to gauge symmetry, but this is still a symmetry of the torus. And then breaks the O28 to O10 cross O6 cube. And this is unbroken. And once again, this would be hidden sector that generates Gugino condensate and can give rise to a superpotential stabilizing the Didoton. Now, what happens is that the full massless spectrum is charged. So that means that there are no neutral moduli in this context. All the would-be moduli are charged with respect to this O6 or O10 gauge group. And so in particular, what you get is that the untwisted sector gives rise to matter in the 10-6i, where i, sorry, where I labels these three or six groups, plus matter in the 6J, 6K, once again, IJK. And in a twisted sector, what happens is that you get essentially matter in the two left I, say, 16 and then 4I, plus matter in the two right I, 16, 4 star I. And this is times 3, where 3 is the number of twisted sets that you get in this model. So clearly, it's not a realistic model. It has a huge number of generations. This 2 is not really a gauge symmetry, simply the 2 left of these all 4 groups. So it's a kind of global symmetry. And the presence of, so this number, 2 times 4 plus 2 times 4, which is 16, in a sense tells you that in this kind of model, the fixed point become representations of the gauge group resulting. Now the problem, once again, of this model, that this would be a model without moduli at first look, but actually there are moduli, and the problem is that if you set to, let me call this twisted matter to zero, there is still a superpotential which combines matter from the untwisted sector. And if I call this kind of matter A and this kind of matter B, the superpotential has a structure which is ABA plus BBB, which is a residual superpotential coming from the n equal 4 superpotential for the gauge group SO28 that you had at the beginning in this model. So what happens is that if you write the matter in a matrix which is 28 times 28, which is something on this form, then you have no matter in the diagonal part, but then you have A1, A2, A3, and then minus A1, minus A2 transpose. Minus A3 transpose, and similarly, B3, B2, B1, minus B3 transpose, etc., etc. And clearly, these are phi I. So if I take phi I commutated with phi j equal to 0 in SO28, this is a flat direction of this potential. So this is only a caveat to say that it's not simply sufficient to look for a model that has no charged moduli. One has to be very careful and look also for the presence of flat directions. Now, this is clearly the lowest order superpotential. In string theory, there may be higher order terms, and I think that along with his collaborators, I've studied model of this kind in which you can turn on, I mean, study the effect of additional terms in the superpotential that may lead to modular stabilization also of these perturbatively flat directions. Are there questions?
Yeah, at this level, there will be moduli.
Why
do you expect there are the no moduli? You don't have to look at the superpotential to see there are moduli. I mean, just look at the deformation of the, say, in the fermionic language, you can add tiering interactions that correspond.
Yeah, sure. But what I'm saying is that at least at the level of the perturbative spectrum, there is no massless field which is neutral with respect to all the gauge groups. That's the peculiarity of this model.
You are at an asymmetry point.
Yeah, sure. But in order to deform from the symmetry point, I have to check that the deformation is really integrable, and I agree with you. But what I'm trying to say is that in different contexts, when you turn on fluxes and you lose control of the perturbative expansion sometimes, or the worksheet dynamics, it's very hard to see whether you really have no flat directions and these kind of effects are really absent. Okay.
It's easy to identify the moduli in this level.
Yeah, exactly. Essentially look for a solution to this equation. Yeah. Okay, so let me start this broad overview of instanton effects. And so let me give a few motivations, which however have already been put forward by other speakers. So first of all, nuclear effects are there, so you have to take them into account. Second, they are interesting insofar as phenomenology is concerned. So typically, some.
Massimo, just a further comment. It's also true that you can project all these models, right? By using exactly what you said, using asymmetric shifts.
Yeah. Okay. But
all the moduli that you wrote there, you can also project them out.
I'm not sure about that.
I can show you. So.
Okay. That would be nice. Okay. Phenomenology. We know that there are some desired or undesired couplings that are not present in perturbation theory, and you would like to generate or to take them into account as an effect of the non-perturbative B-brain instantons, for instance. Now, and last but not least, in many contexts, dualities relating various string theories or string theory and other construction rely on checks of the presence of non-perturbative effects, which in some cases are reproduced by perturbative effects. And in particular, heterotic type 1 duality relies on them, and I will try to discuss some of these issues. Now, as I said, the history of non-perturbative effects started with Worksheet instantons. That, as we know, in type 2A correct the special Kähler geometry. Of vector multiplets, while in type 2B context, they correct quaternionic geometry of the hyperreal multiplet. This is in the context of Calabi-Yau compactifications. And what is nice is that some of these Worksheet instanton effects in a type 2A context can be described in terms of the mirror compactification on type 2B, where the geometry of the vector multiplets is three-level exact. And so this allows by mirror symmetry to compute full series of Worksheet instanton correction and give rise to this what is called stringy or quantum geometry. Now, by if one wants to elevate, if you want, mirror symmetry to a fully what was called the second quantized mirror symmetry by Ferrara, Harvey, Stroninger, and Vafa, then you have to also take into account the effect of deep brain instantons. So in particular, in as I said, the vector multiplets geometry is three-level exact in type 2B and has Worksheet instanton correction in type 2A. Now the quaternionic geometry in type 2b receive correction from, if you want, Wolschitt instantons, D string instantons, DT brain instantons, and then also five brain instantons of very different kind, and also from the instanton. Now these are dual to effect associated to membrane instantons. In a sense, the instanton correction are a remnant of the correction that one has even in 10 dimensions, which are correction to the R to the 4th term, which using duality with M theory have been argued by Green, Gutperle, and Van Hove to be encoded in a nice modular form, which is the essentially the second Einstein series, which is non-holomorphic. Tau is the complexified dilagon, and it's given essentially by this expression. And when expanded in terms of tau 2 for tau 2 going to infinity, this precisely reproduces a series of instanton corrections of this theory. Now, in the context of aetherotic toroidal compactifications, there is a correction to the R square term in D equal 4, which has been argued by Moore and Harvey to be of the form, let me call it F of S, where F of S is essentially the logarithm of the imaginary part of S. Of this kind, which should be associated to Euclidean five-brain instanton. There are other Wolschitt instanton correction in this context, and in particular, there are threshold corrections to higher derivative. F to the 4, F2 square terms, R square, F square, etc., etc. And in particular, these corrections are of, in if you want, if you compactify on TD, where D is really running from 1 to 6, let's say, up to 4 dimension. This ID is an integral of this form, D, where gamma is the lattice sum over the Narayan lattice, if you want, and phi of tau is a quasi-holomorphic modular form, and in particular for cases like the trace of SO32 F to the 4, this is simply equal to 1. So in particular for this simple case, there is only this integral of the lattice sum, and if one uses a Poincaré resummation, this can be rewritten as an integral, the volume of the internal torus divided by tau 2 square times d2 tau, and then a sum over the matrices that map the worksheet torus to into the target space torus of something that looks like either 2 pi I T of M, where M is this matrix, I will be more precise in a moment, e to the minus count. And then, once again, there is this function of tau that hangs there. Now, this sum over, so these matrices are the form, say, M and N, where I runs from 1 to D. And so this sum can be decomposed into three terms, or sometimes called orbits. There is the trivial orbit that corresponds to M equal to 0. There are degenerate orbits that correspond to the determinant of Mij equal to 0, where Mij is equal to Mi and J minus Mj and I. And then there are the what are called the non-degenerate orbits, where that of Mij is different from 0 for some I and J. Now, the trivial orbit simply gives you an integral over the fundamental domain of the modular space, which is equal to pi. These degenerate orbits can be unfolded. This was originally observed by Dixon Klapnowski. And Lewis, in a famous paper on threshold correction to gauge couplings. And in particular, what happens is that you can map, you can use the freedom to parameterize Ni equal to 0 to unfold the integral over the fundamental domain to an integral over the strip. So this is the fundamental domain. And you can add images, if you want, under the modular group, and you fill in all the strip. And it means that you end up with an integral over d tau 2. The integral over d tau 1 is essentially trivial, times something that only depends, if you want, on... Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. This Tm and... Um are the induced Keeler and complex structure of the target stores. So on the worksheet. Now, so this integral goes to the strip. And you can check that it is turns out to be independent on the value of the antisymmetric tensor B, and so gives rise to an expression which is related to what is called the Einstein series of SLD in the d-dimensional representation with S equal to d half minus 1. Okay, so this is, and this only depends on the value of the metric. Now, the last part, instead, can be unfolded to an integral over the upper half plane, and gives rise to an expression which is a similar Eisenstein series of SODD in the representation, two-dimensional representation, at 2D, where this is the vector representation, if you want, of S of DD, with S equal to D half minus 1. And this depends both on G and B. Now, in the heterotic type 1 duality, where essentially there is a map of the heterotic dilaton into a type 1 dilaton, which is something like d minus 6 divided by 4, with a minus, plus d minus 2 divided by 8, logarithm of the determinant of the internal metric. So in particular, in 10 dimension, the heterotic dilaton is opposite to the type 1 dilaton, but this is not true anymore in lower dimension. But in 6 dimension, the heterotic dilaton is related to the volume modulus in the type 1 context, and vice versa. So this is the map. There is also a map of the heterotic metric into a type 1 metric, and the heterotic antisymmetric tensor P maps into the Ramond-Ramond antisymmetric tensor in type 1. So as you can see, the what is called the degenerate orbit will be associated essentially to states which are 1/2 BPS states that only carry Kaluza-Klein momentum and do not couple, if you want, to the antisymmetric tensor, while the non-trivial orbit is associated to objects that couple to the antisymmetric tensor and contains also Winding states, and that will be mapped under hydraulic type 1 duality into this string instanton. So in particular, this construction is very useful in order to map Wolfschmidt instanton in type 1 into this string instanton, sorry, in a hydraulic context into this string instanton in type 1. And so in particular, there has been checks of the BPS spectrum that apply not only to the standard component of the modular space in which, if you want, the rank of the gauge group in addition to the one that arises from the compactification is equal to 16, but also to components with lower rank, so in particular 8, et cetera, which in a type 1 context are associated to non-trivial vacuum expectation value to the Neverschot tensor, which reduces the length of the gauge group. And if you want, these are usually called compactification without vector structure. Now, going to lower supersymmetry, the next example that one can consider is a model of with n equal 1, 0, SUSY in D equals 6, that has two descriptions in the type 1 case. One has a gauge group, which is U16 cross U16, and there is matter in the representation 120, which is the antisymmetric tensor of U16, plus, if you want, complex conjugate. This is a full hyper. And similarly for the second gauge group. This one is associated, if you want, to D9 brain. This one is associated to the presence of D5 brain. And also, there will be some matter in the 16 star plus 16 star 16, which come from open string stretching between D9 and D5. Okay, this actually is a half fiber, if you want, for those who know.
So examples we showed now is this maps when you have basically toroidal compactification.
This is the case of toroidal compactification.
You know, it was done for all before, this was for less supersymmetry.
Yeah, okay, the computation of this on Kaplan-Lewis clearly applies to gauge coupling threshold. Even n equal 1, actually. So there are sectors in n equal 1 compactification which have n equal 2 supersymmetries. Yeah. And those sectors contribute to the threshold correction, but the integral are precisely the same integrals. So what happens is that, if you want, the reason of this is that typically, if you are in 8 dimension with a toroidal compactification, the moduli space is equal to SO2 and V. Where R plus is the dilaton and the other are the vector moduli. And this kind of moduli space is also the vector multiplet moduli space in n equal 2 compactification. So there is a very nice analogy between, if you want, half maximal supersymmetry in 8 dimension and n equal 2 supersymmetry in 4 dimension or lower. But this means that the structure of the integrals is similar, but the physics is quite different. So the dual heterotic model actually has a different gauge group. The gauge group is U16 only, and which is clearly a subgroup of SO32. And this result from, if you want, in the language of fermions, in a projection in which you start from the 32 fermions planetized in SO32, and you decompose them into two sets, say lambda e and lambda e bar. This one gets a phase I, this gets a phase minus I. This seems to be a Z4 projection, but in SO32 only terms with an even number of lambda are present, so the action is in the end a Z2 action. Now, how to reconcile the two descriptions was given in a work by, I believe, Bert Kutz, Joe Polchinski, Cyber, and Witten. And I don't remember, also Lee was there?
Lee Schwartz, yeah.
Lee Schwartz. Okay. So what they observe is that actually, let me draw a picture. So this is not the full orbifold, but I mean, it's a caricature of the orbifold. And what happens is that while the D9 brains wrap the full orbifold, the D5 brains are located at singularity. So if I stack all the D5 brain at the same singularity, I get a gauge group, which is U16. But I can do better, since there are essentially 16 fixed points in T4 modular base 2, I can put one brain at each of the fixed points. Actually, this is not a bulk brain, it's a fractional brain. So what happens is that this fractional brain cannot be moved from this point. So this, even if this seems to be a continuous deformation from one theory to the other, these two are not connected continuously because of the fact that these brains are really fractional brains. Now, what happens is that, in principle, then you have an U16 gauge group associated to the D9 brains, which can be further broken by Wilson lines. And you have, to start with, a group U1 to the 16. But this group U1 to the 16 actually is Higgs'd. And in a sense, the vector field, it's a twisted modulus and becomes massive. And the reason is that the anomaly polynomial in six dimension contains two kinds of terms. One, sorry, it's an E8. So one kind of term is the ones that have been discussed by Vijay Kumar, for instance, in his talk, which are products of two four forms, and in order to cancel the anomaly, you use essentially two forms, which can be self-dual or anti-self-dual, as been discussed. But there is also something which is of the form X2 wedge X6, and okay, this is only present since X2 is something like the trace of F, can only be present if you have a billion factors in the gauge group, and the cancellation of this kind of factorized anomaly involves essentially fields which are, if you want, B0 and B4.
Are the U1s anomalous?
Always. If you have a U1 in six dimension which is coupled to a charged object, this is necessarily anomalous. There's no way to have a U1 which is not anomalous. So in particular, there's no light in six dimension if you want.
So the fact that the U1s disappear, is that the Green-Schwarz effect? Or is it a...
It's a generalization of the Green-Schwarz mechanism, which is not even a Green-Schwarz agnotic. It's something else, because Augusto generalized the Green-Schwarz by the B2. This is... involves another kind of fields.
Are you sure about the statement there are no non-anomalous U1s?
If there is a charged matter with respect to a U1, this is necessarily anomalous, because the anomaly is it's proportional to Q to the fourth, and this is a positive number. There's no way to cancel it. So you can only have non-anomalous U1 if there's no charge matter with respect to them. So clearly, you can have models in which you have U1s, but there shouldn't be any charge matter coupled to them. Okay, so this model, let me stress, is a model in which you have only one tensor map. That means that there is a component, let me say B, 2 minus, that belongs to the supergravity multiplet. And there is a component, B2 plus, that belongs in a tensor multiplet. And this tensor multiplet, in a heterodic description, contains the dilaton, which, which is part of the universal tensor multiplet in this case. While in a type 1 description, contains the volume modulus, as I said before, because the heterodic dilaton in this context is dual to the volume modulus. Now, so this is nice in a sense that this mechanism of Higgs in this U1 removes moduli in this context. So in particular, you lose all the neutral moduli which would be present in a standard compatification, which you, for instance, you embed the gauge group in a spin the spin group in a gauge group. Now, a test of the duality, the further test of the duality, which involves D-brain instantons.
One more thing. So if you, I guess you turn on the Fs for the fields in 120.
Yeah, you can X, yes.
But you will never get the
No, the 120 is only charged with respect, say, to this one, if you want.
Yeah, but...
There's also 120, so this, if you want, this is D99, that would be, if you want, this model, if you want, is self-T-dual at special point in the modular space, so involving both.
So my question is, what do these fields correspond to geometrically? Do they not correspond to moving the default brains away from the fixed point?
Before, yes, if you start with the U16, clearly you can Higgs this U16 and you can move the brains to the bulk by turning on this moduli. Okay?
But you say, but I can't move them to where it's U1 to the 16.
Yes, that's the point. Because as soon as you move them from the fixed point to the bulk, you reduce the rank of the gauge group to 8. And then clearly you cannot regain U1 to the 16 by moving the brains.
Well, but if they reach the fixed point, then...
But as a bulk, you cannot separate them anymore and make them into 16 objects that move to different... Okay, so let me briefly mention this test of the duality, which is related to the fact that the hypermultiplet geometry in this case is a three-level exact in the heterodic description. And this is related to the fact that, as I've tried to stress, the dilaton in the heterodic description belongs in the tensor multiplet. While in the type 1 context, it receives both perturbative and non-perturbative corrections. Now, three-level in a heterodic context means that there are washed instantons, okay? So in particular, one can consider one way to describe the quantum correction to the geometry, which was actually observed by Strominger and the two Beckers, is that if you want, the curvature of the quaternionic manifold that describes the hypermultiplet has essentially two components. One is related to the SP2 part, and the other one is related to the SP, if you want, 2NH part. I'm using a notation which SP2 is equal to SU2, not SP. And in particular, there is a component, so the Lagrangian, contains a coupling of 4 hyperini in which this index runs from 1 to nh, and this object is totally symmetric under the exchange of these four indices. And the fact that these are fermions and this should be totally antisymmetric, x accounted for by the presence of this epsilon tensor that, after all, makes it a singlet also of the Lorentz group. So, in particular, one can consider the case of twisted hypermultiplets, which are in the representation 16 of the U16 gauge group. 16 or 16 stars, in order to make it a singlet. So in particular, one can consider an amplitude which depends on the location of the four hypermultiplets, F1, F2, F3, and so would be something like this. So this amplitude can be computed by standard conformal field theory techniques, so essentially using the result of Dixon, Friedan, Martinek, and Checker, which is the computation of scattering amplitudes in heterodyne orbitals. And I mean, the result is compact. It can be written in this form. So you can map, if you want, the sphere with, say, insertion put at 1, 0, and infinity, and the cross ratio z. You map into a torus by a map given by this ratio. And you end up with an integral. So this amplitude in a heterodic description becomes an integral where this is the volume of the four torus, maybe divided by 2, because this is the orbital, t to tau divided by tau 2 square, and then you have something like theta minus theta 4 to the 4 divided by theta 2 to the 4 times delta U1 U4 bar delta U3 U2 bar.
Sorry, just a dumb question. So what happens to the topology when you send you back the sphere into the torus?
The reason is that, okay, so you have a sphere. You have essentially two branch cut running from 0 to 1 and from z to infinity, for instance. And so you double the sphere to make it the functions defined on this double cover single valued, and this is a topology of a torus. Okay. So, okay, now let me try to. So, what happens in the type 1 context okay, is the following. But because of in perturbation theory, so your state will have an index which is associated to the D9 brains, and then an index which is associated to the D5 brain located at the fixed point F. Okay? So scattering amplitudes that involve this kind of field will have two part of the boundaries which are associated to the D9 brains, and then we'll have. I don't know how to draw it. Okay, let me draw it this way. Which is of this kind. So you can only have couplings. Okay, so there are two different kinds of couplings, if you want. One in which this one is identical to this one. So essentially, what happens is that if you look carefully, that means from the point of view of the orbifold, means that the four open strings are of this kind. So they are essentially located at the same fixed point. In this case, what happens is that you have two open strings which are of this kind and two of this kind. So in particular, in perturbation theory, there cannot be any coupling which is associated to open string in which F1 is different from F2, which is different from F3, different from F4. So there is no perturbative coupling which is of this kind. And in fact, this coupling, you can see from the heterogeneous description, can only receive a correction contribution from Walsh-Shield instantons. So, in the heterodic type 1 map, this means that this coupling is associated to ED1 brain instantons. And together with Francisco Morales, we checked that this map was exactly working in this context. So this is a nice test of the duality, and also teaches us the way to include, if you want, a multi ED brain instanton effect in at least this n equal 2 context. So let me try to use this last half hour to discuss the phenomenologically more interesting case, which is n equal 1 supersymmetry in 4 dimension. And in order to illustrate the ideas, I will consider 2 simple cases. One is essentially...
Could I maybe ask you, there was the issue also, those are all tree level, right? Well, I mean, in terms of amplitude calculations too, so...
Okay, in the, what do you mean? This heterodic computation is tree level.
Right, but when you're trying to interpret that in terms of amplitude screens or zero mode contributions from... instantons,
mm-hmm.
right, to reproduce that.
Yeah.
Those are just the diagrams that you're looking at?
Yeah, sure, these diagrams.
So they are not are older diagrams. What I'm referring to is, you know, there were issues of exhibiting this duality at the next order level, at the group levels. And
I mean, what we found is that since we believe the heterodic result is correct, and the topology...
In this context, I meant in more general context, the other corrections to actions that could come from really loop calculations, not these calculations.
Sure, but for different couplings, yeah. So yeah. For instance, F to the 4, I believe Marco has worked quite a bit on this in the equal 8 context, and the topology. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But are there any issues, right? What are the open issues? Or in certain contexts, at this higher order levels, there were.
Yeah, I think at least, but Marco can correct me, in 8 dimensions where this has been tested quite precisely, what happens is that when you have the breaking of SO32 to SO8 to the 4, that means that in the description in terms of these 7 brains, you are at the point in which there is no local Dilaton tuple, because in a sense you have distributed your D7 brains evenly over the 4 fixed points, and they precisely cancel the local charge of the omega 7 plane, which in this context is an omega 7 minus plane. Then for this case, there is a precise match between heterotic and type 1, or let me go with type 1 prime, or type 1 double prime in a sense. That's correct. But if you try and do at a different point in moduli space, then there is some discrepancy. And these are associated, if you want to wash it instanton, with the topology of a torus, not with the topology of a sphere. Okay. Is that correct?
So the issue are not settled at this higher genus level.
Well, let me say that the problem, I believe, is related to the fact that you're expanding local, I mean, you're trying to use a localization technique that I believe, in a sense, rely on the fact that you're expanding with respect to a solution of the equation of motion. While if you have a local Dirac-Lorentz tuple, it means that locally you're not satisfying the equation of motion. That it's my impression, but I'm not the expert on this, and I don't know if Marco has any.
In general, in the moduli actions for the instant of moduli, you have to include as an expansion one over GS or in GS. Also higher loop contributions. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, I think, this is now.
Yeah, but from the hadronic point of view, these are not present because it's only a one loop result. But clearly, in the map, which I have erased, really what happens is that the Dirac-Lorentz in the type 1 description or type 1 prime description becomes a combination of the volume of the internal torus and the Dirac-Lorentz hadronic string. So you get higher order perturbative corrections, which, I mean, were all already observed by, say, Bacchus, Fabre, and Kiritsis and others in this context. So let me go to the n equal 1 case. So in the n equal 1 case, essentially there are two classes of deep brain instantons, two broad classes, if you want. So the first class is sometimes called gauge instantons. Because if you want, the Euclidean DP minus 4 brain wraps the same cycle as a physical DP brain present in the context. And usually, this can give rise to superpotential of, if you want, the Veneziano Jankielowicz Alfred Dynan Cyber form, which are something like lambda to the beta, where beta is the beta function of the gauge theory, the DP brain, divided by something which is a polynomial of dimension beta minus 3. And this can be tested in many contexts, like super QCD and other cases. In particular, I will come to this in a moment, there is an example with T6 model by Z3 where this is very neat and simple to describe. So, and the second class are what are usually called exotic instantons, or sometimes also called string instantons. If you want, in this context, this fact that there is a relative number of 4 of Neumann Dirichlet direction means that the effective description is in terms of gauge fields which are either self-dual or anti-self-dual. While the exotic instanton, so the number of Neumann Dirichlet is essentially 4, is the analog of context in which the number of Neumann Dirichlet direction is equal to 8, if you want, in connection to these toroidal cases. And that means that you have a Euclidean DP prime brain, if you want, which is wrapping a cycle which is not wrapped by physical brains. And so this can generate superpotential of various kinds. In particular, there can be a constant term in superpotential, there can be, if you want, linear terms, there can be quadratic terms, there can be cubic terms. Anyway, the main difference is that, as you can see, the chiral superfield appear in the denominator in the case of gauge instantons, while they appear in the numerator in the case of exotic instanton. And this is related to the simple observation that in this case, there are some bosonic moduli that couple schematically in this form, there will be additional fermionic moduli that will couple in this form. And when you compute the integrals, what happens is that there are terms in the denominator. Now, in this other context, instead, what happens is that there are no bosonic moduli. There are only fermionic moduli. This is the case of, if you want, if you consider a D1, D9, the fermionic modulus which stretches between the D1 and D9 is precisely one of the hydraulic fermion in case you have an omega 9 plane that invades space-time. And so these fermionic moduli only couple to these phis, and so they bring down a positive power of phi. So let me illustrate this with these simple examples. The first one, as I said, is T6 modded out by Z3. You start with a quiver gauge theory with three gauge groups. If you want, let me call it UN0, UN1, and UN3. This corresponds to, if you will, regular brains. And then you have matter in the representation, and 1 and 0 and 1 bound permutation, which gives rise to essentially a superconformal field theory. Now, if you perform an omega projection, so you introduce omega planes, what happens is that you can have essentially two kinds of projection. In one projection, you have N0 identified with N0 bar. In the case of omega plus, let me stick to the case in which I have D3 brains at a singular local singularity, which is of this kind. And so if I include the omega 3 plus plane, this will give rise to an SP N0. Then also N1 is identified with N2 bar, so it will be also a factor of UN1. So generically, imposing a local tadpole cancellation what happens is that for this particular case N0 minus N1 has to be equal to 4. And that means that you have a theory which is, if you want, N plus 4 cross UN. And there are three generations of matter in the representation N plus 4 N bar, if you want, plus 1 and the symmetric tensor of UN. Now, in particular,
so the first quiver is chiral, right?
Yes, it is chiral.
Then why don't you consider the sound to be the same rank?
Yeah, but if you introduce oriented for planes, then you change this. So the local task for cancellation receives a contribution. This is, if you want, it's the contribution of the oriented for planes. In that sense, that would be 0, and then you would have a chiral theory, which is, however, with gauge groups of the same rank. So in particular, if you consider the case n equal to 2, that means SP6 cross U2, and you count the number of fermionic zero modes associated to the matter field and the gauginos, turns out that the number of gauginos zero mode minus the number of matter zero mode is equal to 2, which is precisely the condition for a generation of Alfred Dannen Seiber superpotential. And in particular, in this case, the instanton is of what you may call O1 kind, because the gauge group is of a symplectic kind. And the derivation of the relevant superpotential is extremely simple, because there are no ADHM constraints. So you end up with an integral over dw alpha dot, dw bar alpha dot, and then there is an integral over an object that you call d nu zero, and then there are some d nu I, and they couple to the phi field. So now let me So you see that if I take n equal to 2, this object, there are three objects which are 6, 2. And actually, this 2 is also charged with respect to the U1. It has charge in the correct convention, it's minus 1. So you see that you can call this object phi. There is an index A running from 1 to 6, and then there is an index I and an index that I will call U. This runs from 3, from 1 to 3, and this runs from 1 to 2. So you can think of this as a 6 by 6 matrix, in a sense. So there is this coupling, and then there are these fermions, nu I. And then there is this phi bar I A nu 0 A, and then there is U here. Okay? So this is a coupling. Now, the integral over the bosonic coordinates gives something like 1 over the determinant of phi phi dagger. The integral over the fermionic gives something like the Pfaffian of phi bar, thought as a 6 by 6 anti-symmetric matrix. And what happens in the end, this object is something like 1 over the determinant of phi. There is an overall factor coming from the instanton action, and this is nothing but the analog of lambda to the power 9, the beta function of the SP6 gauge group, in this case is equal to 9, and you can check that this is the generalization, the correct generalization means that this would be the gauge kinetic function for the SP6 gauge group divided by the determinant of this object thought as a 6 by 6 matrix. Okay, a slightly more complicated example is the case in which you take an omega 3 minus plane, and then the tadpole condition changes sign, and that means that n0 minus n1 has to be equal to minus 4. In particular, you can take n0 equal to 0 and n1 equal to 4, and you get a U4 theory with three copies of the antisymmetric tensor of U4, which is a vector over SO6, which charge, if you want, plus 2, and the relevant instanton is a U1 instanton. So in particular, there will be, to start with, more fermionic zero modes, but there are ADHM constraints and integration over various species of fermionic zero mode that allow to get an integral over this supermoduli space with a coupling of the schematic kind phi nu phi, and in the end plus standard 1, and what happens is that in the end you generate a superpotential which is actually similar to this one, which is the gauge kinetic function of SU4 divided by the determinant over I and J of a matrix that is something like phi I, then UV, if you want, U1, U2, phi J, U3, U4, epsilon U1, U2, U3, U4. So the U's indices are the gauge group indices that run from 1 to 4. And so this is a gauge singlet, which is, however, made by means of a tensor which doesn't never appear in open string perturbation theory. And you take a determinant over these, if you want, the fake SU3 indices. There is an accidental symmetry, which is SU3 for these low derivative terms in the effective action. Now,
so are both these oriented folds defined in CFT? Do both these oriented folds have CFT?
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah. This is the nice feature of these constructions, that everything is under control from the point of view of the Wu-Shield dynamics.
I described it too much, but this ADHM constraints, can you remind me? Because it seemed to be so easy up there for a 1 gauge instant hours.
Yeah.
For you 1 gauge instant hours, you have to do this.
Yes, sure. Okay. So what happens is that the ADHM construction is a construction of instantons in four dimension, and the way it is implemented in string theory is essentially beautiful. I mean, becomes intuitive by using D-brains, and this was earlier observed by Douglas and Witten, and then exploited by many groups. So the idea is that if you have a context in which a number of non-manifold relations is equal to 4, so you can consider, say, if you want the 95 or the 73 or whatever, something like that, or D3, D-1, which is the context that I was essentially working on in this description. What happens is that you have open string that start and end on a D-1 string, and this would be essentially the gauge fields and gauge genus. Let me call them theta. There would be essentially 10 components of these and 16 components of this object. And then there would be, so this will essentially have n equal 4 supersymmetry. Then there will be open string stretching from the instantonic brain to the physical brain. And this will appear in what would be hypermultiplets of the n equal 2 supersymmetry that survives in this context. And that will be described by objects which have bosonic components that are usually denoted as W a dot and W bar a dot, and then there will be fermions that I denote by nu a and nu bar a. Now, if you perform an orbifold projection, first of all, it is convenient to split the A into an A mu, which is along the four directions, which are longitudinal to the D3 brain, and the Ki and Ki bar, which are essentially six objects, which are common transverse directions. Then the thetas will split into objects which are spinors of the SO, so you essentially decompose the SO91, or if you want in the Euclidean case, SO10 to SO4 plus SO6. And with respect to SO4, some of the genus are doublets and carry an index with respect to SO6, and the other one are anti-Carroll, and sometimes are denoted by theta bar. Now, it is convenient to introduce also an auxiliary field that encodes the potential. So what happens is that in this n equal 4 context, the equation of motion for theta bar and dA give rise to the super ADHM constraints. So in particular, varying with respect to dA implies the equation A mu A nu eta mu nu A plus W bar sigma A W equal to 0, which is a very nice way to write in the standard ADHM equation, while varying theta bar A alpha dot gives you an equation which is of the form sigma mu alpha, sorry, alpha dot plus w nu a alpha dot plus nu a w bar alpha dot equal to zero. So this gives a constraint that typically removes some of the fermionic zero modes. And as I said, once you perform some orbifold projection, typically what happens is that some of this field get lifted by the orbifold projection, and you end up with object that, I don't know, something like theta alpha zero. This should be interpreted as the theta variables of n equal 1 superspace. And hopefully the rest of the fermionic zero mode are lifted by the interactions. Now, okay, so let me stress again that in this context, you can also include exotic instantons. And exotic instantons associated to the case of, okay, so ED3 brains, let me call them I, so they wrap a four torus, which is, or if you want, the orbit for the four torus, which is orthogonal to the torus T2I. So this gives rise to a superpotential term, which is a mass term for this phi, which, as I said, belong in the representation minus six, six minus two. And so there would be something like a sum over I of something which is the action for this ED3I. And then, I don't know, I would say ms, phi i. Now, it's been argued by Angel, Uranga, and Ibanez, that thanks to the fact that you also have a D10 superpotential, which is something like phi phi dagger minus zeta square, by giving a non-zero. So this object, unfortunately, depends on the closed string moduli. But suppose that this gets a positive or a negative value, then you would break supersymmetry by using this construction. By combining, if you want, there is a superpotential term, which is this Affleck-Dinant-Seibert term. Clearly, the field space is multidimensional, but okay, let me consider the modulus component of this object will be something like decreasing, and this one will be increasing associated to the mass term, and so this would be something like that, and combined with the D-term D-term potential, that may lead to supersymmetry breaking. Clearly, you may say that there would be somewhere a minimum, okay? You can tune the closing module so that the D10 potential is equal to zero in that particular minimum.
Well, that's complicated.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to skip the last example, but I can give details to. No, it's a U1 instanton, but it has the correct number of zero modes in a sense that there is only nodes which are in the representation so there are four fermionic zero modes that lift essentially give rise to a term which is quadratic in
Is because the background
is to begin with
n equal 1?
Yeah. Now, so, I have no time to describe actually this case, which is also very nice. I give you as an exercise for. So you take the quiver, which is of this kind. Okay, so this is a quiver gauge theory. Then you make an omega projection, and you end up with an unoriented quiver, which is of this form. So you check that local tuple cancellation is consistent with taking a gauge group, which is O1 for the upper node, which is U1 for intermediate node, and is U5 for the lower node. It has matter, essentially, yeah. So this is the field contact. You call this object BI, you call this object CI, you call this object AI, you call this object C3, and this object is absent because it's antisymmetric, and 1 times 1 antisymmetric is equal to 0, and you call this object E. There is a three-level superpotential, which is something like BI CIE plus AI CI C3. You can check that this is consistent with Champadon rules, if you want.
Are you telling the SU5 guard?
It's okay, so you have two generations of temps plus pi star, and then you have a 5 plus 5 star plus, yes, one of them, and then you have two singlets. These two singlets are this B object. Now, what you can do is to study the effect of instantons, and you can check that first of all, perturbatively, there is a degenerate vacuum. With essentially B1 mod square plus B2 mod square is equal to Xi1, where Xi1 is the Fayette-Yoppel stand for the U1, for this U1 here. And then clearly, if you take Xi5 equal to 0, you can put to 0 all the rest of the fields. Along flat directions of the perturbative potential, with this particular choice of Fayette-Yoppel stand, once again, this is subject to the fact that this object typically depends on the twisted moduli, then you can lift essentially these fields and end up with, because there is this mass term. So this is, you can use as a mass term while once you give a vev to this object. So you generate a non-perturbative superpotential, which essentially is of the form lambda, let me call it, head to the 10, let me check, yeah. No, lambda 10 head to the 11. Divided by an object which is cubic in the A's and linear in the C, and it's formed using the epsilon of SU5, once again, cannot be generated in perturbation theory. And if you study the minima or the extrema of this theory, you will see that there is no supersymmetric vacuum. We also discussed the model from the point of view of the strong coupling gauge theory. Okay, this lambda hat to the 11 is related to the lambda to the 10 of the original, 10 is the beta function of the original gauge theory, 11 is the beta function of the gauge theory once you've Higgs the 5 and 5 star, and the square root of xi1 is this mass parameter that appears because of the vacuum expectation value of B. Now, we also discussed the strong coupling dynamics. Which can be described in terms of various mesonic fields, X, which are essentially these CE, these are singlet of SU5. Then there is an object which is Y, which is something like A CC, or there is a Y tilde, which is given by CC. A, and then there is a Z, which is this AC that appears there. Now, the originally for B equal to zero, what happens is that there is a deformation of the moduli space. So in particular, there is a constraint that tells you that yz is equal to 0, and this has dimension 7, while there is a constraint which is of the form xzz plus yy tilde z equal to 0, which has dimension 10. And so the deformation in the original theory means that this object, very much as in Super QCD with the number of colors equal to the number of flavor gets it. But once you turn on a B, that means that you have a Fayette-Leopold Stanford U1, which is not confined in the dynamics. What happens is that you generate a dynamical superpotential, which is essentially of the form that I described there. So it's this lambda to the 10 divided by ZZ, where now Z is not considered as a composite object, but rather as a fundamental field in this strong coupling description. And once again, the combination of the two gives us to supersymmetry breaking. And in particular, what we checked is that the anomaly matching constraints are satisfied. So in particular, you start with a theory which has a global symmetry. Sorry, it's U2, and there is a U3C, and there is a U2B if you want. And you can break these two SU2, A, C, and B, cross product of two U1. And you can check that actually, both in the weak coupling description and in strong coupling description, the anomaly match. So this is a good, and this is a simple model of supersymmetry. Once again, the caveat, very much as in the previous example that I gave, is the fact that you want to tune the Keller moduli so that the Fayette-Leopold Stanford, the U1, which is not part of the U5, is positive while you keep this equal to zero. In this case, there are two moduli, let me call them T1 and T2, and so essentially this means that the particular combination has to be positive, and another combination, which I will call xi of phi, which is has to be equal to zero. So this is clearly subject to the possibility of making this tuning. Now, I really have no time at all to discuss anything else, and I would be glad to discuss in private with whoever is interested in the effect of fluxes, not from the point of view of the perturbative story, but rather if you try to describe D-brain instanton or other kind of instanton in, say, ADS flux compatifications. Okay, thank you very much.
Maybe we can discuss more.